Hi there, and welcome to the Kingdom Sexuality Podcast. We're Alana, Kyle, and Tira, friends who have a heart for intimacy and long to uncover God's truth and design for sexual freedom within marriage. Welcome here. Welcome to another episode. We're going to start out with a review today. It was 5 stars, and they said, Kingdom Sexuality has really opened the door and given me the confidence to have hard conversations with my husband. We are both an important part of our relationship, and sometimes we just need to discuss it. This podcast has made me feel seen and not alone in what we struggle with. Coburn 31. Wow.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like this episode too, like, so we had put up, okay, well, I'll do the Bible verse and then I'll dive into that. Okay. So the Bible verse I chose for today was Matthew 17:20. Truly, I tell you, if you have faith as small as a mustard seed, you can say to the mountain, move from here to there and it will move. Nothing will be impossible for you. So when I put up the question box, there were so many women who were like, I'm just so glad you're talking about this. Like, no one talks about pain and sex. No one talks about uncomfortableness in it, anything like that. And so, I'm just really glad that we're going to talk about it today with you. So Jess, why don't you introduce yourself? How, where are you? How are you doing? Tell us a bit about you.
Yeah. So I'm Jess. I am an occupational therapist and I work with women with vaginismus. So I work a lot online now as a vaginismus coach. And it's something that's super passionate for me, because I have vaginismus. So when I got married, you hear all the things about sex is going to be amazing and incredible and fireworks and all these things. And it wasn't. It was not that. And then, you know, you're like, okay, well, I'm sure it's painful at first. And it stayed that way. And so it's just a point of frustration. There are times where it's just completely impossible most of the time. And so I think I waited a year of having painful sex before I finally was like, I don't think this is normal. I should probably get help. So I searched around for doctors. It took me 4 years to find a doctor who didn't gaslight me
or just dismiss it.
Yeah, it's so terrible. I mean, anyone who has vaginismus has heard the cliche things of what to do. You need to drink wine, use more lube. I had a couple providers tell me to watch porn with my husband to learn how to, how to be aroused and to relax, take a bath, all these wonderful things that you're like, it's been 4 years. Don't you think I've tried all this? Don't you think I've Googled the heck out of this? So finally I had a doctor who mentioned the word vaginismus, tossed me over to pelvic floor therapy, where I spent the next 4 years. So I have a passion for working with women who have failed out of pelvic floor therapy, because that was me, which is super embarrassing because I'm an occupational therapist. So if anyone should be a rock star at this, it should be me. So yes, I repeatedly was going to pelvic floor therapy, would be there for a few months, and then they'd kind of just discharge me and be like, sorry, we don't see, you're fine. Your vagina is normal. And like, no, it's not. I can't have sex. It's not normal. So yes, my passion is working with women who have had a hard time recovering from vaginismus. Maybe you're just diagnosed. You have no idea what to do. Some women don't have access to a great pelvic health therapist. Some just are in this tossed around between this land of no one knows what to do, drink wine, all of this stuff. So my hope and my prayer is to be able to connect with those women and just say, you're not alone. You're not broken. You're not asexual, like a lot of us think we are. And there is hope and there is healing. So that's my passion. And that's why I started Pain-Free Intimacy, to have a platform to just shout from all of the different social medias, like, you're not broken and you should not have pain during sex.
Amazing.
Question so for good. You. And you, like, when you were going for your first going through the first year, did you talk about it with your friends?
No. Okay. No. Actually, I think I had one friend I talked to about, not the first year. I eventually started opening up as this became more of an issue in our marriage. And it did cause some I'm gonna say turmoil, but some challenges in our marriage. I think like the marriage bed does speak a lot of volumes to different areas of our lives. So, you know, we started seeing counselors, and I did reach out to a couple friends, and I'd get kind of still more cliche advice.
I was kind of curious, like, in kind of the little bit of research that I've done around it, that seems to be the one of the biggest, like, first hurdles is just talking about it. And so I was curious if you yourself had reached out, not that you like necessarily wanted help for it, but that you actually brought awareness to it. Like, hey, this is something I'm struggling with. Because I think that's really the first step, is just women talking about it so that you know, like,
right.
When was the first time you heard the term vaginismus?
I think it was that doctor who mumbled it to me. And even then, that was back in maybe 2013. And I started Googling it from there with just very little resources. Mm-hmm. My first dilators were like dildo sex toys, because they just was not like Intimate Rose was also just now coming out with, like, I think her story is similar in that there was nothing. So there's nothing to Google, nothing to help me. And the few women I did open up to were just like, no, it's not painful for me. And I just, like, for me, it was like, okay, it just
almost made it worse.
More shame. Yeah. It made me like clam up a little bit more, like,
yeah.
Okay. So
yeah. Oh, that's hard. Okay.
Well, I'm glad so you're the spokesperson now.
Yes. No kidding. No kidding. Absolutely. So why don't you tell us one, like, fun fact about yourself before we, like, fully dive into this?
I love animal documentaries. I love Blue Planet, Frozen Planet, Planet Earth, all of them. I've watched them all on Netflix. I never want to watch an actual movie with my husband. It's always, can we please watch Blue Planet?
That's so cute.
Love it.
So
did
good.
You watch all the zoo ones on, like, Disney Plus?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Those were a big hit in our family. Yeah, like, as soon as they were.
Yeah, Tampa Zoo is one of my favorites, but it's also close to where I live. So.
Oh, so lucky.
Yes. So nice. Okay, so for those who don't actually even know, what is vaginismus? Because many of us, like, I know for me, it was only once I was, like, in this realm of, like, intimacy and stuff that I saw other people talk about this. And I was like, I still don't really know what it is. So many others are the same, I'm sure. As soon as we bring it up in anything, people are like, what even is that? So why don't you give us, what is it?
Well, I will say you're not alone. Many gynecologists don't even know what vaginismus is. So it's more common than I think we think it is. But I think it's just no one knows what to label it. And even, like, the DSM has switched a little bit on how they label this. So I think if you Google vaginismus, they say it's an involuntary muscle spasm. And there's some research to show that it's not incredibly so much a muscle spasm, but basically it's when your vaginal wall muscles contract and like activate instead of relax upon penetration. And that can be tampons, speculums, fingers, penises. Usually it's when the penis is involved that we really start getting serious about, oh my gosh, this is not fun. Mm. Basically it's painful penetration of any kind. And the DSM has now taken the word vaginismus out and has generally labeled it like genitopelvic pain penetration disorder, GPPPD, which I personally think is a disservice, because vaginismus is its own beast, because a lot of the reasons why our vaginal wall muscles are not cooperating is we don't have good control over them. And so they're not necessarily spasming. They're just not able to be disactivated or deactivated. We're not able to control them, to relax them. And the reason a lot of times for that is anxiety. There's fear, any pain, previous history of pain, whether it's your first pap smear at 17 years old was traumatic, so now you fear penetration. So previous pain or shame associated with that area. And what happens is your vaginal wall muscles see any kind of incoming thing as a threat. And so they do what they're supposed to do. Like, they're supposed to, upon threat, we're supposed to clench. And so they clench, like they're doing exactly. And that's why all the pelvic floor therapists will say there's nothing wrong with your vagina, because it is doing what it's supposed to do. We just have to gain control over that. And so vaginismus is a little bit of a beast, because it's not just a muscle problem. There is that mind-body connection that's happening as well.
Right. So it's not, so someone say they have vaginismus. First step is pelvic floor physio, like, or is it where you just do things at home? You go to a counselor, you try and make that mind-body connection?
All of the above.
Oh, okay.
Yes. The gold standard is pelvic floor therapy. And I am pro-pelvic floor therapy, especially, you know, as a therapist. I do want to caution with that, because I know there are so many women, including myself, who just, like, wanted to cry when someone would say, like, you need to go to pelvic floor therapy. And you're like, I have been there. I'm so exhausted of pelvic floor therapy. So I will say, like, their vaginismus is a very holistic and comprehensive diagnosis. And so pelvic floor therapy is a very important aspect of it, but you don't necessarily need to go to a pelvic floor therapist if you don't have access to one, or you're just right. in an area that doesn't have a great one. We can get past this. You still need to do the vaginal training and vaginal desensitization work, connecting with nervous system work, which my baby is nervous system work. You know, aligning your nervous system to support your vaginal wall muscles is key, which was the breakthrough for me in healing. But you can heal from this without necessarily needing to go to pelvic floor therapy, although I do recommend finding a good pelvic floor therapist.
Huh. This is so interesting.
And would you say, like, would all pelvic floor physios recognize this condition and be able to, or like, would you recommend somebody research first or like reach out and actually speak to one before actually committing to like an appointment?
Ooh, really good question. Yes. Most pelvic floor therapists should be equipped to handle vaginismus. And here's the kind of the caveat with it is, pelvic floor therapists are incredibly good at knowing the musculoskeletal system and the inner workings of the pelvic floor. The problem is when you take vaginismus, which is a little bit more of a complex diagnosis, and you put it into the category of musculoskeletal, like the traditional biomechanical model, it doesn't work. So if you have a pelvic floor therapist who's only operating out of that biomechanical model of muscles and joints, you're going to fail out of pelvic floor therapy like I did. They're going to say, oh, you should be healed of this in 8 weeks. That's what our protocol is. You got to the largest dilator. Congratulations. You did all we needed to do. And yet for me, I got to the largest dilator and then I could not transition to my husband. So it's like my goal's not met. Yeah. Something is disconnected here. And so if you have a good pelvic floor therapist who sees vaginismus beyond just the biomechanical musculoskeletal model into a neuro or biopsychosocial model, which is that broader context, and it's more of like the chronic pain context. When you see vaginismus in that context, then yes. So if you can interview your pelvic floor therapist, if you can do look at reviews and see like what kind of model are they treating vaginismus in, highly recommend that, because it's going to take away a lot of the little trauma that surmounts with going to a clinician who's not necessarily skilled at vaginismus.
Okay. Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
So you've been talking a bit about dilators. What are those?
Right. Dilators. I have dilators all over my desk. So my sweet husband gets to look at all of my vaginal specialty stuff. But dilators are, they're made of different materials. And so a lot of them are either plastic or silicone. The silicone ones do tend to be a little bit more of an investment. But the silicone ones tend to model a penis a little bit more and just like the little bit of give that it has. And so they're cylindrical shaped, various like diameter width objects that kind of mimic a penis or a tampon or a finger that you train your vaginal wall muscles to relax around. So a big misconception with vaginismus is that you take these dilators and you stretch your vagina out. But our vaginas are normally stretchy. They're designed to stretch. They're designed to push babies out of them. They're designed to take in penises. That's how they're equipped to be. So we don't necessarily need to stretch them out. But if you have that mentality, that actually may be holding you back in your recovery. What we need to do is train our muscles to have control and relax upon accepting an object like tampon, penis, speculum. So the dilators are there as vaginal trainers to teach your muscles what to do when something's coming at them.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Sorry. It's just like little things along the way that I was like, let's just make sure everyone fully understands kind of what we're.
Also, can you go over like, what are the symptoms of it? Like we know that there's pain, but like, can you describe like what, if a listener is listening right now and they're like, oh, I've never heard of this term. Maybe that's what I have. Could you like, what are the like check marks of like, oh, maybe this is what I have
versus just like any sort of other kind of pain when having sex or things like that.
Yeah.
So usually the classic is that, and there's different types of vaginismus, primary and secondary, but either one, usually penetration is not possible, or if it's possible, it's extremely painful. The gold standard thing that everyone says is it feels like I'm hitting a wall. And this is what I experience also. It's like they're physically, it just is not going in, and it hurts the more you try. Some women with vaginismus can get penetration in, but it's incredibly painful. And the few times I was able to, it resulted in tears and burning sensations. And I've heard women describe it as like a knife slicing them, as a match being lit inside of them, a hammer pounding on them, a nail being driven in. And it usually persists. I think that a formal diagnosis is like past 6 months. I don't want women to go 6 months before they get help for this, because that's too long. That we've got at 6 months, you've built so many negative pain pathways that it's going to be even harder to heal from. But totally, I generally say like a month. If you go throughout your entire cycle and you've had pain at every single point of your cycle, then we need to talk. And then the other thing is, like, a lot of women find that they have shame or fear associated with penetration. A lot of my women I work with get nauseous and disgusted at interacting with their vulvas or their vaginas. And so there's a telltale of shame there. And so if you have trouble looking at yourself, touching yourself, feeling yourself, thinking about penetration, that may be more of a symptom of vaginismus than maybe some just hypertonic pelvic floor muscles. So, yeah.
Huh. Crazy. Okay. So let's think about, okay. So what about just like pain in general? So like kind of stepping away from like the vaginismus part of it to just saying, okay, so a couple, they're like having sex and the woman is like, hey, when we try this position, it really hurts. Or, when you do it from behind, like that really hurts. Or when you go too deep, it, like what can people do when they're experiencing pain in that kind of context?
Right. So it's so broad because there's so many different ways you can experience pain with sex.
Yes.
There can be pain on insertion. There can be pain with deep penetration. There can be burning sensation with pulling out. I mean, there's all kinds of different levels of pain. The big question is, has there been trauma to that area? So if there's a history of trauma, or if you've delivered a baby and there's been some tearing or whatever, like that's going to cause a little bit of trauma. Definitely recommend pelvic floor therapy at that point to get a good look at what's going on, and a gynecologist appointment to make sure everything's intact and working well. If you've had pain for over a month throughout your whole cycle, then it's time to see someone. So, but if you just like, this one position's a little odd, I don't like it. One, you can always change positions like that. Just don't do that position. But two, you can just make sure that you are appropriately aroused, because arousal is how our bodies are designed to accept a penis. Like that's the best way for you too. So if you're doing penetration or PIV, like penis and vagina penetration, before you're aroused enough, your vagina might not actually elongate and soften enough to make that a pleasurable experience. And so I would say focus more on arousal and foreplay, and just making sure that you can even orgasm before you get to the PIV part, just to make sure like that area is nice and elongated and relaxed. Also, I mean, the cliche, use more lube, because any kind of burning vaginal dryness is usually a lube problem. And you can always pull out and add more lube if you need to. I've had to do that quite a bit. Just depends on how stressed you are. If your vagina is going to absorb that lube or, you know, whatever's going on, add more lube. Don't be ashamed to do that and speak up about that. And then if you're still experiencing pain in certain areas, you can always get what's called a pelvic wand. And some women just have hypertonic pelvic floor muscles. Again, I recommend seeing a pelvic floor therapist if you have hypertonic floor muscles, when that's just like a tight pelvic floor. And then you can also use a pelvic wand at home. And this is kind of like an S-shaped little, kind of like a dilator, but it's got like a hook to it. And you can get, do some like deep tissue massage with this internally. So if you have one area where you're like, that one position, that one spot hurts. I have this because I'm a runner and I just have a tighter pelvic floor. So I have to work on some specific muscles. And it's just like, if you have a shoulder massage and you have that one spot that you're like, that hurts, and you just kind of do some deep tissue work on it, we can do the same to our pelvic floor muscles. So you could get a wand. Amazon has pelvic floor wands. Intimate Rose has them, and you can work on specific areas. You can always go see a pelvic floor therapist to help show you how to use that a little bit better too. I don't know if that answered your question right, but it's such a broad category, like sexual.
Yes.
And to note too that like everybody's internal placement is different too, you know, because you can have, you know, your vagina or cervix in different positions. And so certain positions aren't going to feel good, even though everybody's like, yeah, this one's the best one. Well, your body might not appreciate that one because the angle doesn't work with your physiology. So that would be another thing. And I always advocate for what time during the month too. Sometimes you're going to be way drier. Sometimes you're going to be way more open and already easily elongated, you know? So at that point too, that can affect what pain potential you have.
Definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you do run as a hypertonic pelvic floor, so you have a tighter pelvic floor, which a lot of us who sit a lot or do sports and work out a lot have probably more tone in our pelvic floors, that's going to make the elongation of your vagina a little bit more difficult. So you might just need to do more vaginal wall and pelvic floor relaxation muscles, muscle exercises, even before sex. Like a lot of the women I work with, we have like a little mini yoga routine that we do before dilating even to help relax our pelvic floor muscles. And so as you get to know your body and you know what your body needs from you, you can do these specific movements or exercises or yoga positions or whatever, even before sex, or incorporate them into your foreplay routine to just get your muscles nice and softened, relaxed, and elongated so that penetration is not as painful.
Yeah. So that's what I had after giving birth and stuff. And then because of my job sitting at a desk in my normal job, but also teaching piano. And then because I sit on one side of the piano and lean over all the time to do stuff, I'm very imbalanced on both. So yeah, there was exercises and stuff I had to do to get them even. But then also, yeah, before sex, having a routine of like, okay, I have to do my hip circles and stuff like that, that all like helps loosen up. And then like incorporating a different breathing techniques and all of that. And so yeah, there's lots of different things to do to make it better.
Yeah. And you brought up breathing technique, and I can talk about that just a second too, because that's a huge topic I didn't talk about. But if you do some diaphragmatic breathing, which is breathing with your belly, and it's kind of hard during sex to focus on your breathing, but if you can focus on your breathing and breathe with your belly and your diaphragm, that actually does elongate your vaginal canal as well and relax your pelvic floor muscles. So even changing your breathing, like you said, is a huge way to be able to relax those pelvic floor muscles. So big fan of diaphragmatic breathing.
I loved it. Like, so when I was at the pelvic floor physio, you know, she's in you as we're doing it. And then she would say, okay, now we're going to try the breathing. And so when the finger's in there and you're doing the breathing, you can actually feel the difference. Like, it's crazy. So I appreciate like going to the physio, because I wouldn't necessarily experiment like that, say in a sexual time, but when you're just actually focused on the muscles in your body and viewing it like that, and you can actually see what the difference is, like, okay, when I take a deep breath in like this and I let go and I like, it changes. It's crazy.
That's amazing. That's very cool. So kind of switching a little bit, how can husbands be supporting their wives in this process, wherever they're at, you know, but experiencing pain at some point during intimacy?
Yeah, I love this question so much. The woman I work with vaginismus, I have like a special vaginismus for husbands mini course that I give them for their husbands to learn, because
that's amazing.
Husbands are a major part of this as well. And so my husband went through this whole thing for 8 years, and he is the most incredible man in the world. And so he put together this like vaginismus for husbands mini course, which was really sweet. But I think one of the biggest things is take the pressure off of your wife. Because vaginismus and pressure are the opposites. If you have any pressure to heal, like I want to be healed by my honeymoon, or I want to be healed so that I can owe my husband's ex or whatever, you're not going to heal. Like your pelvic floor is just going to continue to freak out and not respond well. So if your husband's putting pressure, like, did you do your dilator exercises? Did you go to pelvic floor therapy? Are you doing this? It's going to cause your healing to be a little bit slower. So my encouragement to husbands is take the pressure off, remove any timeline you have. Even if finances are a problem and you're like, well, the copays are adding up, remove that, because any kind of guilt or shame that you have associated with a timeline or a pressure is going to complicate your recovery. So if you can remove that pressure, that's huge. And then support her. come beside her and set up a time where she can do her dilator work. Like the dilator work unfortunately does take some time. And so it's super helpful if as a spouse, you can help her set up an environment that's safe for her, because anytime we do penetration, we want it to be a safe and positive experience. So if you guys have kids, that's what, take the kids to the playground. So she has her time. That's making sure that, you know, she has a space in her bedroom that the dog's not going to barge in or whatever and startle her. So whatever you can do to protect her time in dilator sessions is great. Maybe make dinner, do the dishes, and say like, while I do dishes, you go do your, you can do your dilators, whatever, to really just help set her up for success in her routine and with her exercises is going to be helpful. And then I would say learn about vaginismus and learn that it's not something that's like an incompatibility thing. It's not a she doesn't like you or she's not. It's not like learn about what vaginismus is. Learn that it's an actual medical condition. Learn about female anatomy. Know the different parts of her. Know how to stimulate her, bring her to orgasm without penetration, so that she can feel like she's supported and can enjoy things without the pressure of penetration or you feel like him feeling like he's not getting what he needs or he may think you're not attracted to him. Remove all of that. And then the last thing I would say is, know that you can be a trigger. And this is what was hard for me and my husband was, for me, anytime my husband would come up, even from behind to give me a hug, I would like squirm away. I just immediately would be flooded with like these negative thoughts of, oh my gosh, I'm going to let him down. We're going to go through this again. We're going to, even if we just do things without penetration, it's going to be a reminder that I can't give him this. And so I had to realize that the hugs, the holding the hands, everything that we would do outside the bedroom, I was starting to associate with painful penetration. And so once my husband was able to recognize that, it helped us to communicate better. And he was so sweet. He'd give me a hug. He's like, I'm giving you a hug and I just want just a hug. I don't want this to lead to anything else. And him just saying that was enough for me to relax into that hug and not feel like I was going to let him down or let myself down. So.
Yeah, I feel like that, like having that open communication and honest communication would be so key because feelings could so easily be hurt. And like for husband, for the wife, right? Like things you say unknowingly that, it's good. Okay. So we got so many questions. I'm just trying to see which ones we want to go through next. I had one and I don't know. Oh, okay. So we got lots of questions from women who are like engaged and, you know, excited to be married, but they also have these lingering fears. One, that it's going to be like super painful when they do have sex for the first time. And two, newlyweds who are now, you know, having sex with their husbands, but they're wondering how long will this discomfort last that they're experiencing?
Yeah. So my husband and I used to work in college ministry. And so we would go to a lot of weddings and I would give women this like, honeymoon or like night of basket full of all the things that you would want, but you wouldn't want your mom to give you. And I used to put ibuprofen in there because, you know, the first time hurts. And I have since stopped that because that perpetuates the narrative that sex is painful. And so for the women who are about to get married, I would take that off the table. Sex is not supposed to be painful. The fact that you anticipate this to be painful causes you to clench up. And anytime we clench with insertion, pain. So it's not supposed to be painful. It will be painful if you clench, but we're not going to have that. We're not going to fear that because this is what our body's naturally designed to do. Now you may be sore afterwards, just like if you went to the gym and used some muscles that you never used before, there might be some soreness, but that's a different thing rather than that initial penetrating pain. Now the soreness will probably last like maybe around 2 weeks as your body adjusts. It depends on how often obviously you have this and at what point in your cycle you are at. But I generally say like if you've got a month and you still have painful sex for a month, so if you've gone through your cycle and it's consistently painful, then we need to talk. We need to get past this. That's not normal. It's common to have pain with sex when you first start, but it's not normal. And it's something that I think we need to address, especially if it's been going on for at least a month. And if you do have the pain the first 2 weeks with penetration again. Watch your mental state, watch your mindset. Like, are you anticipating? Are you clenching? And then if you just have that soreness pain of like you went to the gym and you've got like, oh man, I can kind of feel this. Like, just know that that is a normal response to muscles being like, after you go to a massage, if you get a massage, I'm sore the next day from that massage. That's normal. Right. That's to be expected, but that will go away the more you practice and the more you do it. But the initial insertion pain, not normal. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't be happening.
Yeah. I love how you said like, it's common, but not normal.
Yes. Right.
Like, just because it's common doesn't mean it's normal.
So someone asked, how can I get in the mood when I am anticipating or I know that it's going to be painful?
Right. I actually just created a free handout and shared on my Instagram about this because so many women ask about this. Like, okay, so if you aren't having penetrative sex because it's painful, that's understandable. You can obviously do other things. But if you have painful penetration, the other things are also not fun because you know that you are lacking, or you know that like this is something in the past that's led to pain. Mm-hmm. So part of this is, you know, your body is not going to be able to be aroused if it's not relaxed. And so there's a whole nervous system, and I work a lot on the nervous system with arousal and with penetration. And so if you're not in your parasympathetic nervous system, which is your calming nervous system state to start with, you're not going to be able to get aroused. So we have to do a lot of the mind-body work to get our bodies truly relaxed and operating out of that non-stress state in order to be able to even just like start working on the arousal. Things you can do to that is one, even just educating yourself about how orgasms work, where your body needs to be. And the more you know about your body, the more you're better able to help your body and nurture your body. And then again, remove pressure. So if you just take penetration off the table, that's going to help a lot with that pressure point. So anytime there's pressure, again, our libidos, our arousals just like leave with that. So take all the pressure away. And then create a psychologically safe space. So knowing that you are secure, you are safe, that you can trust your partner, that you've communicated well with your partner, and you can say stop at any point. And once you've created that psychologically safe space, your pelvic floor will also feel safe. And so safe pelvic floor equals a happy pelvic floor. So you can do whatever you need to do to help your pelvic floor muscles feel safe and secure. And then I teach a lot on mindfulness and just different types of mindfulness. And if you can focus on mindfulness, and this isn't just like the la-di-da, go to your happy place kind of mindfulness. This is like actually focusing on what are the thoughts that are coming in and then nurturing those a little bit, but not spiraling into those. And so coming to a point of like, what are you in the present moment faced with right now? And then working with that in a positive way is super, super helpful for helping your body even shift into that parasympathetic, that calming nervous system state so that you can enjoy arousal and orgasm better.
Yeah, so good. So you mentioned too, like how trauma can have an effect on so many things, especially like in that area, right? So we kind of touched on it a bit, but would you recommend someone see like some kind of therapist or like a counselor, things like that, to try and also combat pain with sex?
For sure. I mean, if you have any kind of big T trauma, any history of sexual trauma or abuse, definitely, absolutely, without a doubt, see someone who's a licensed counselor that can help you with this, that needs attention. If you have a surmounting amount of little T traumas throughout your life, whether that's your period showed up unexpectedly in a white dress and ruined your dress in front of everyone, or whether that's, you know, just a doctor shaming you or whatever, like high school memories about people saying you'll never be able to be sexual. I've heard all kinds of different things, and those add up. And so, yes, those would also benefit from a good, like licensed counselor, like diving into that. But just doing a lot of mindset work and like that cognitive behavioral therapy piece is going to be really big for helping our, helping us to know what the negative belief patterns are that we need to break down, and then what true belief patterns we need to build up. And then there's always that component of purity culture. And I work a lot with Christian women. I tend to work mostly with Christian women because purity culture and vaginismus do go hand in hand. And so we break down a lot of the negative belief patterns that maybe the church has communicated throughout the years. And we break those down and then we build up healthy biblical patterns. Like we talk about like, what is God designed for sexuality and women's bodies and how can we celebrate that? Because until we let go of a lot of these negative belief patterns, our pelvic floor muscles are not going to cooperate. They're still going to see any kind of attention, penetration as a threat. And we've got to remove that threat stimulus with purity culture can be a threat.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Well, this was like a wealth of knowledge. Thank you so much, Jess, for everything.
That's
amazing. Mm-hmm. So where can our people find you if they want to find more of your resources? They want that freebie you got. They want all the things. How can they find you?
So you can go to painfreeintimacy.com. I have a bunch of resources there. I also have a private Facebook group and I dump so much content into that private Facebook group. And so you can find that through my website or on my Instagram. Instagram is painfree.intimacy. And when I had vaginismus, I had nowhere to turn. And the things that I did find were a little bit more traumatic for me. So my goal is to give as much away as I can to help women through this. So I do that mostly through that Facebook group and just dumping videos and content and trainings there. But I also do have a pretty thorough, comprehensive, like 12-week program that just helps you get past this once and for all. And so, yeah, you can find me painfreeintimacy.com or on Instagram.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much. So good. So we like to end our episodes in prayer. Would you be able to do that for us today?
Of course.
Awesome.
Heavenly Father, we praise you. We thank you for your goodness and your kindness. We thank you that you see us and you just show up for us. You shepherd our hearts and you shepherd our bodies so well. And we just praise you for the gift of sex that you've given us. And I want to apologize for just like the layers that I add to that and how I complicate that when you've given us something so pure and so beautiful. So I pray that you help renew my mind and many women's minds to just see sex as a beautiful thing and to just praise the clitoris that you gave us to be able to enjoy this gift. Like you're so good. You see us in our moments. You see us in our darkness and you want nothing more than for us to enjoy intimacy the way you designed us to. So Lord, I pray that you would help us in this, guide us in this, and encourage us along the way. We thank you for your goodness. It's in your name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Hey friends, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you like our content, please like, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts. And tell your friends too. Thanks so much for journeying with us today as we tackled the hard questions and dive deep into godly intimacy. Make sure you follow us on Instagram to see more of our content and check the show notes for any links we might have mentioned in today's episode. We're so grateful to be on this journey with you and we can't wait to see you in the next episode.